This is a Triple J podcast.
Piss play can be really appealing. It's a wonderful way to play with domination.
Hello, Dee Salmon here, and this is the Hookup Podcast, where we talk all things love, sex, dating, and relationships. And recently, last week, we did two huge episodes about what porn you're into, what your porn taste says about you. Pip and I heard from so many of you in the DMs and through voice memos, which, by the way, you can message us anytime on our Instagram at Triple J The Hookup. That's how this pod works. And we basically heard from you about what you're into, and it was so varied, so broad, but there was definitely some common stuff that kept coming up. And one of the things that a lot of you messaged us about was that you were into piss play or golden showers or water sports, basically anything to do with peeing and sex. And whether that was like stuff that you watched on porn and then realized it was something that you wanted to try with a partner, we realized we needed to unpack this a bit more and do a whole episode for those of you who really want to try this out or want to just like unpack a little bit about why this might be something that you're into. So that's what we're going to do in this episode. You're going to hear from sexologist and psychologist Laura Lee, good friend of the show, and we're going to, find out what exactly it is, how you can do it, why there's still a bit of shame and taboo around it, and how to bring it up with someone that you're keen to try it with. So let's get into it. Laura, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start at the very basics of this. What exactly is piss play?
Right. Well, piss play, technically called urophilia, is essentially consensual sexual activity that involves the presence of urine. So that can be in a number of different ways, but that's essentially what constitutes piss play.
And the nickname for it can be water sports as well, right?
Yes.
If anyone sees that and they're like, oh,
yes,
what does that mean?
Yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah. So how common is it for people to be into this?
Yeah. I think it's more common than people might expect. And I would say a couple of things on the data that we do have. So firstly, there is some data that we do have out of the Kinsey Institute, which found that this was Justin Lee Miller's research. He's incredible. And he wrote the book about sexual desires. And he found that 32% of men and 15% of women had a fantasy involving water sports.
Really?
Yes. And I feel like that number is probably higher than people might think. Pretty common. We're talking like a third of men, right?
Yeah.
So like really common, totally normal fantasy. I want to say that. Secondly, we know that these kinds of interests are often actually really underreported and underrepresented in the data. So I'm inclined to think that those numbers are probably even lower than the reality in terms of the level of interest. We don't have a lot of data about people who are actually engaging this kind of activity because, again, there's so much associated with this kind of activity, so much feeling, so much shame, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and taboo. So it's really widely underreported, but that gives you an idea of how many people are even into it.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's a scale, right? There's people who might be like intrigued.
Yes.
Or people who might be like, I'd dabble or I'd try that once or I'd be, open to it. And then there's people who are like, I'm really into this. I kind of need this to get off.
Yes.
Which we'll unpack in a sec.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is it about it in particular do you think that people are so turned on by? Yeah.
Well, all our fantasies have an emotional component to them, right? There's something underneath it that is really arousing to us. So when it comes to this kind of play, there's a couple of really common themes I hear about. One of them is the taboo, the tabooness, the transgressive nature of it. Think about early messaging we got about cleanliness and tidiness, right? Think about clean bedrooms, presenting yourself clean and tidy, wipe your face, like all these messages we got from a young age about the importance of cleanliness. It is understandable then that these messages then transferred into sex, like sex being this kind of, let's make it this clean, sterile, beautiful kind of experience, right? That same messaging has kind of come over to our sex lives. So this idea of playing with something that is widely considered to be unclean in some way is like a really lovely way for someone to step into the transgressive when it comes to sex. That's a really common thing with this kind of play. A couple of other things that I hear really commonly is the power dynamics of it. It's a beautiful opportunity to play with these ideas of surrender. It is a literal letting go, isn't it? It's a physical letting go. And think of all the ways in our lives, all of us of all genders are required to be in control in our lives, constrained or restrained in some way. This is a literal letting go that we can bring into our sexuality, which I think is really lovely for people to play with. So there's control and surrender dynamics. And there's also a really strong sensory element. So some people are really sensory driven when it comes to arousal. And you think of all the elements involved with piss play, warmth and texture and smell and taste and all of these things you can play with. Some people are really drawn to the sensory. So there are a couple of some of the key themes.
With the power dynamics, talk us through a little bit about it being a fetish or kink and how that, because when we've unpacked it on the show previously, like I think we spoke to a dominatrix about it, and this was something that she does a lot in her work of BDSM. And she was saying that it like involved for some clients a lot of this whole idea of dom and sub.
Both sides of those. Peer play can be really appealing. It's a wonderful way to play with domination. It can be infused with some themes around like degradation, which is a really normal and common part of domination and BDSM play, but not a requirement. But it can be explored in that way. So those elements of domination and control. But on the flip side, there are also those elements of submission, that surrender that I talked about, that kind of receiving. Like if we are potentially, for example, letting someone urinate on us, receiving someone in that way is a really powerful way to play with that power exchange.
Why do you think those stats you said before as well, not to gender it, but why do you think it is double the amount of men that are into it?
Yeah, we do know there's something about the letting go that I mentioned before that feels particularly relevant to men. And men report this. Men who are interested in this kind of play report that this is a type of play. Sometimes it might be the only place in my life where I feel like I can really let go, because I think about some of the messaging men are carrying around their role in sex, their role in maintaining potentially an erection for a period of time, lots of messaging they're getting about not coming too soon or not taking too long. And so this is a way of quite literally sometimes in the only area of their life I can fully let go, surrender to a sensation.
Let's chat a bit about the taboo then, because it is one of those things, like you said, from such a young age, we're taught like, absolutely not, don't pee in public, don't, you know, wait till you get to the toilet. Like even wetting the bed, there's so much shame around that.
Yeah.
What is there like a bit of a stigma and taboo-ness around this still, or do you think it's like lessening?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would say a couple of things about this. Some of the good news here, I think, is that some of this stuff is becoming more mainstream. And when I say that, I'm talking about kind of all aspects of kink, really, and sexual play. There are areas where this is becoming more mainstream. There's a really diverse range of pornography or erotica available. And in sex-positive communities and spaces, these things are talked about the way we are right now and talked about with openness and acceptance and definitely free from judgment. But what I would say is there's something in particular about bodily fluids and sex that is still considered pretty taboo and still seems to generate a disgust response from some people and the fear of that disgust response in others. And I really understand why this is one of those topics that people feel so concerned about bringing up to their partner. It feels pretty high stakes, doesn't it?
Definitely. And I think we see that as well when we've done episodes around squirting and people are like, oh, is it urine? Is it not? Is it, like, they're so obsessed with finding out what it is.
Yeah.
Rather than just like, let it just be this liquid.
You know what,
you know what I mean?
That is such a great point, actually. Like the noise around, like you said, the obsession with what is it, as if we were to find out there's something bad there. Like, so, okay, what if we were like, it's not, but what if we were like, yes, it is urine.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then what?
Then what?
You're going to shame someone?
Yes, yeah.
For squirting when you loved it a week ago?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It is this obsession with, like, you know, needing to categorize things and instead of just being like, there's bodily fluids when you have sex.
Yeah. Like. Yes, there's lots of bodily fluids and lots of just bodily things happening that I think we go to great lengths to avoid sometimes.
Let's talk about where to start then, Laura. So if you, for you listening right now, if this is something that you're curious about, like I said, there could be that scale. It could be like, I'm interested, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, what are sports like? Or it could be something that you're like, no, this is something that I'm really into and I'm too scared to try. So where should someone start?
Well, I love water sports light, by the way.
Yeah. Water sports light.
Water sports light. I love that. So a couple of things. I would really invite people to always start with themselves. I hope people listening to this would consider thinking about what we were saying earlier about the different things that can be a turn on for this for people. Take the time to explore for yourself. What's the part that really arouses me about this? Is it the domination? Is it the surrender? Is it the taboo-ness? Is it the imagined sort of sensory elements? Like, take the time to know that. I want people to know that for themselves, not because it's just a nice thing to know, but because it can really help us get the most out of our fantasies. That's where the juicy stuff is. The richness can be found there. And explore it for yourself. Fantasize, consume, you know, ideally ethically made pornography if available to you. Like, explore it with yourself and start to unpack what that feels like for you. And please, if people hear nothing else, hear this, that any shame that comes up around this is really rooted in the social conditioning stuff we were talking about before. It can be really confusing for people when they experience both arousal and shame. That is a really complicated relationship. And I just want people to know that the presence of shame here does not mean you're doing anything wrong. I think the second thing I would say here is talking about how to introduce it to your partner. And that is a beautiful starting point to invite someone else into your world. And firstly, like, I say it that way because I really believe that it is special and intimate to invite someone into our fantasy world in this way. And that first conversation, I will always encourage people to start from a place of willingness and openness. We're not having a first conversation to reach an agreement about what we're going to do. That's absolutely not where we're going first. That first conversation is just, I've been thinking about something and I've been noticing it's really turning me on, or I'm feeling really aroused by this and I feel so excited about it, and I want you and I to know each other and be close to each other. Can I share it with you?
God, that's good. I was just like imagining that. And it's like, how can, there's no way when you lead with that anyone hopefully would ever not also lean in with kindness.
Yes, I would be very hopeful that someone would meet you with the same level of openness and be able to stay with you in that conversation.
From that point on, maybe you have spent some time thinking about it yourself, about what turns you on and what it is that you want to try. But what are all the different ways that someone could play?
So I think I would start with things like fantasy and pornography. And if we were to build up to involving a partner, that might involve some dirty talk about it, talking about it during sex, and just see how it feels to introduce that element just verbally. People can play with it by role-playing with other fluids. So I've known people who started with warm water. And of course, starting in the shower is a really common way to try it. And that can be as much or as little kind of build up as you like. Someone might want to have somebody pee in the shower and they're just in the shower with them. Someone might want to have their partner keep the door open when they go to the bathroom. And if everyone is consenting, these can be nice ways to play with the inclusion of piss play in the broader play, right? That's what we're trying to do here. Now, again, if you're listening to this and thinking it sounds kind of overcautious, I guess my steer would be that, like, I actually think there's lots of good stuff to be found in this anticipation. I'm not saying these things just to be risk averse or cautious. I think it's because there's good times to be found in the slowness and the build up and the anticipation.
Like with anything, with sex, right?
Yes.
It's like that's foreplay, or it's like it's hard to go from 0 to 100. You might scare yourself or your partner, or you might, you know, be like, no, I'm not into this. But if it's something that you slowly build up to, then that might be something that you're like, oh, wow, this is actually something that I'm
becoming more comfortable with. Absolutely. And don't forget, if you're the one who's been interested in it and then brought it to your partner, you've been doing that build up for a really long time yourself, and your partner might have never even really thought about it. So when you invite them in, you can't just scoop them up and bring them along on your ride. Like, they're also now starting their journey of building up to it. So, and again, I go, how wonderful to now do that together. So there's no need to rush. If two people make a decision to explore this, I want you to enjoy the build up and the exploration.
What are some things to consider and keep in mind, especially if it moves out of the bathroom?
If it moved out of the bathroom. Yeah. I guess some practical things to keep in mind are that sex can be messy, but this can be particularly kind of messy. So there is some practical kind of elements to consider in terms of where you are doing this, waterproof blankets, sheets, those reusable pads, obviously things like waterproof blankets, all of those things are useful to have. I think that's really important. The other thing I would say is whenever we're trying something new, I actually think it's really important to dial up some of the kind of check-in language and aftercare language. And that's not true just for piss play, that's true for anything new. So really dialing up the kind of checking in. One of my favorite kind of principles, if you like, of consent is that I think we all have an individual responsibility to be someone who is easy to say no to. So it's not just about checking in and just saying, you good? And hopefully they're like, yeah, but you don't really know. What are the things you're doing to make it really easy for someone to say, actually, can we take a break? Mm. Like, it should be so easy for both people involved, for all people involved, to ask for those things and offer those things.
I think that's such a brilliant way to think about consent.
Mm.
It's like you're not just doing the motion of being like, hey,
yes.
Like yes or no.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That is a real mantra of mine, is be someone who is easy to say no to.
I love that. Mm. What about safety outside of consent? Is there stuff that you need to worry about? Is it cleanliness or like, you know, is there anything that can be like shared between with fluids or anything like that?
So urine is generally considered to be reasonably sterile. But the but to this is there can be some unknowns, just like, frankly, with the exchange of most bodily fluids. So the ingestion of urine can never be guaranteed to be risk-free. And again, I would say just like the ingestion of any bodily fluids, the only hard kind of line where I would say don't ingest them is in the presence of a known urine retract infection. That would be a definite no-go. But otherwise, I think it is important to remember that no sex and no consumption of bodily fluids can be totally risk-free.
What about taking it to the next level? Like, what is that? What does that look like if you're, you know, you've, like I said, dabbled in the shower, maybe dabbled a bit like on the bed? Like, what are some ways that you could play around with the kind of power or the kink of it all?
That's where my mind goes, actually. I go to like where you can play with it a bit more might be involving it in broader types of kink play or power dynamics. So there might be involvement of more of those dom sub dynamics we talked about before. Maybe if someone's into it, the introduction of more degradation or humiliation type kinks, or kind of submissive, pleasing kind of kinks. Like, there are some ways you can play with this in a broader scene where you can dial up those elements of power exchange if you feel safe to do so.
And say this isn't something that your partner is keen, obviously that's a huge thing that you need to respect. Are there, like, if you've had a conversation or you don't have a partner, are there other places where this could happen? Like, you know, I mentioned the dominatrix. Is there like sex clubs or sex parties and that kind of thing where it might be able to be something you consent to with another person?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all kinks can be explored really openly. And if it is something you really want to do with another person, there are lots of options available to you. And I am a huge fan of engaging experts in this space, dominatrix, other types of sex workers. There are lots of people here who are really well equipped to make this a wonderful experience for you if that's a conversation you can have openly with your partner. And of course, if you don't have a partner, that could be a lovely way to start your exploration with a partner too.
And if there is still that shame or there's stuff you need to work through, what are some ways people can work through that with professionals? Or
It's a huge one. I mean, there is so much internalized stuff for all of us around sex just in general, but it is around this topic in particular, around piss play, there can be a lot of shame because of all that stuff we talked about before, the conditioning and the cultural taboo-ness. And sometimes that relationship looks like being flooded with shame after an orgasm. That's really common. And that's because we know that when we are sexually aroused, there's a real gradual dialing down of our shame and disgust response. So then after orgasm, we can be flooded with that, oh my God, what did I just do? What does this mean about me? And I, you know, I really want to highlight the presence of shame alongside arousal does not mean you are doing something wrong, right? The presence of shame can simply be that social conditioning. And the good news I would have for people is that with the right support, shame can really be unlearned. And when I do this with my clients, I get people to really like, really dig, you know, dig around in those, what are those scripts I've internalized? What is that messaging that I've internalized? And what people so often realize is when they say out loud the things that are touching their shame, they realize how much it no longer fits with their current belief system, right? It's old stuff that we've internalized. It sits in our body. And when I say it out loud, the healthy adult part of me goes, I don't believe that anymore. That doesn't fit with my worldview anymore. And that can be a really nice start to starting to shed some of that shame.
And, you know, realizing that like so many people, I think we spoke about this in the porn episode we did, that there's so many people out there who are in, like, everyone just has the most incredibly rich, diverse stuff that they're into. Do you know what I mean? It's like that we all individually hold so much shame, but so many of us as well, if we just like, found people who were also into that stuff or listened to podcasts like this or saw online that there's like a community out there. It's like you're never truly alone in what it is that you're into.
Never. It's so interesting, isn't it? Because like when we say it's so diverse, it is, but actually most of our sexual desires and interests are actually also kind of pretty similar. Basic and normal. Yeah, they actually are still pretty similar in terms of like I think we often think that what we're into no one else is into or it's particularly niche. I think we think we're particularly niche and we're just not. And the challenge with that is of course then finding community, and that's why sex positive spaces and communities can be so healing for people. It's so valuable to find people where you're talking about things you're into and they're all going, yes, same. And you go, oh, yeah, same. So, and, you know, there's online spaces for that and these kind, you know, listening to podcasts like this, like just having more of these open conversations is a really nice antidote to that shame.
Oh, thank you, Laura. And we'll put some notes in the show notes where people can find your work online as well. But this has been so great. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was so fun.